This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled podcast. I'm here with Benit and at the company Ignite. We are really pleased to have you. And could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, Benit, and also the company?
Sure, Armon. Thank you for the opportunity. So my name is Benit Jain. I'm the co-founder CEO of Ignite. We are headquartered in Silicon Valley, where I am actually been resident for a long time. And the company is addressing the core need of the world is awash with unstructured content of all kinds. More data is getting created than ever before. And it's just not regular files like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, but a lot of drone data. If you're in life sciences, a lot of genomics data. So the world being awash with data, how do you manage? How do you store? How do you share? And then how do you make sure from a content security perspective that this is in safe hands and compliances are being addressed. So Ignite has built a platform, which is at a very simplistic level, a combined value play of content collaboration and content security governance. And we sell to businesses only. Today, we have 23,000 customers and a few industries where we seem to have gotten deeper in. One is in particular AEC, which is an acronym for Architecture, Engineering, Construction. Then financial services, and the third one is biotech life sciences. And we are around 1,200 employees.
That's awesome. That's great. Congratulations. This is a great success. One of the topics that it was mentioned before was that you think that a startup should really focus on creating value more than focusing on just creating valuation or increasing their valuation. What do you mean by that? How really a startups can really focus on value versus valuation, and what can it be translated to in their kind of course of actions?
You know, this reference to value versus valuation is more relevant for private companies, companies which have not gone public. And there is maybe in the early stages, companies are more focused on raising a series A, B, C, D, whichever way they want to talk to. And a lot of companies, I would say all, they tout their valuation post-fundraise. And while that's an interesting metric to talk about to attract talent, it really doesn't mean much when you look at what does it really do for the end customer, whether it's a consumer-oriented play or a business-to-business play. The real thing to look into is on an ongoing basis, even in the early stages, is your product delivering value consistently to the target customer base that you're selling to? And therefore, the price that you're charging, is that commensurate with the value realization that your customers have? So this overarching focus on valuation versus value is what I think you're talking about. And valuation will increase. It'll improve if you're going through a 409 evaluation every quarter or every 6 months, whatever that's relevant for you. If you're delivering value, your top line grows, your potentially margin improves. And that shows up in the valuation increase, but that should not be the focal area. It should be a derivative. The focal area should be on value delivery, value realization for your customers.
Makes perfect sense. So in other words, you say, think about it long term. If you think about valuation is just short term, but if you think about creating value for your customer, creating solutions for your customer that, helps them to, solve their problems, then you are thinking long term and valuation will follow. and you reach to the goal that you have anyway, and that makes perfect sense.
Yes, absolutely, totally agree.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you're absolutely right. You know, when you are a bigger size company, that comes to place, and probably that's more meaningful topic. But even for a startup, it's still from the day one, if you are not thinking long term and you are just reacting short term, it may not be a good thing. So even for a smaller size company, it still is good to have that kind of vision in mind and thinking a little bit long term. That is, am I really creating enough value for my customers? So that's a very, very valid point. We are mostly in this podcast talking about things that matter to SaaS companies. And one of the very hot topics, and of course, in your case, your company is involved with content management and security aspect and AI aspect that is now, especially after Gen AI came to market, has been very much, you know, in relationship with kind of content. So everybody thinking about content also thinks about Gen AI. How do you see that really where AI is going, how AI is going to change the way SaaS companies, you know, need to know and need to think about it to impact them?
I'm so glad that you actually use the word AI and then generative AI as two separate things, even though generative AI is nothing but a subset of AI. And indeed, generative AI, ChatGPT in particular, has made this very popular and something that everyone's talking about, even beyond a business user. But the reality is companies have been doing machine learning and AI for a long time, including Ignite. But with generative AI, the power of unleashing all that strength, all the analytical capability, I would say even offloading some of your decision-making to the AI models, all of that is absolutely real. At the same time, I would say, Armand, that the hype cycle is probably at its peak, where the expectations from, since we are talking about SaaS company and enterprise buyers, they think, or the expectation is that it can be the panacea that will cure all ills. And that's based more on misinformation, also a lot of expectation, which is based on the hype cycle. But the reality is going to come down to what exactly can AI do for me. At the most basic level, people are concerned about, will it replace the human being? And that's when they talk about AGI. I don't think we are anywhere close to that. And having said that this is a hype cycle at its peak, I still believe that the core capabilities as they are being unleashed, obviously the fundamental underpinning is the LLMs, and then you build the application layer on top. We ourselves as providers are still coming to grips with the power of what it can do, which can be absolutely fantastic. But I think in the life cycle of something new and something which has got so much hype, it is yet not mainstream. If you remember the classical bell curve, it will become mainstream faster than you and I can imagine. And I think it's got a long tail impact in terms of the capabilities, how they'll mature. So initially, we think that these capabilities start with helping you synthesize, in my world, mountains and mountains of data to query this data set in simple natural language models. And then the next step is to make it actionable. And then the third step, which is the final one, is lights out operation, where the AI is pretty much running everything in background. You don't even monitor or curate, but we are far away from that. I think these first two steps are what's going to play out over the next couple of years, in my opinion.
And thank you as well for really separating these two, because when it comes to content and on the analytics side, in my world, we have the same thing, that you look at the content and you look at it analytically, and AI has always been helpful to analyze, to categorize, to, you know, kind of understand the content of the document. Now, Gen AI, of course, on the generation part of the content, has added a dimension, but I'm with you completely that we are at this stage that probably we have seen a good demo. We have seen maybe a POC or proof of concept, but yet takes time to get to a real product, as you said, creating real value, not just valuation with GenAI. And I think that's a phase that probably will come in some years. But as you said, we are not there yet. And in some aspect, if you're not narrowing down the use case, it might be many years from us.
You're absolutely right. I think the most important thing right now is there's a lot of experimentation going on. And companies are experimenting with these nascent AI capabilities being rolled out by vendors, including Ignite. And initially, they're thinking of, as I said, the ease of information access or the information synthesis, and then subsequently automation of certain tasks. And I do think that instead of this one generic approach to all things furthered by generative AI, if you can make it more industry specific, if you can invest a lot in the RAG models to improve the accuracy and the reliability of what generative AI is helping you do, I think that's where, for the next several years, a lot of leverage is at your behest that you can take out and do it in a profitable fashion. But this journey is going to be a bit longer than what people imagine. It's still very early. Mm-hmm. And with all the value expectation people have versus what the capabilities of the product are, the gap between value expectation and the value delivery is very high right now. Mm-hmm. This has to reduce. And that's when people will get more comfortable with, okay, this is what I'm willing to pay for it, because now I understand what it's actually doing for me. Right now, it's all very muddled.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And how do you feel about really putting the right content and quality data behind AI? Because most people may not realize that AI is not useful if you don't have the quality data and content behind it. And it can be as powerful as possible only when you have the real data and the quality data behind, or the quality content behind it. What's your take on that? Because the journey starts with data or content, not with AI. And if you have not solved the first problem, there is no way you can get anything meaningful out of the second phase, that is maybe leveraging AI.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, typical, the old saying, right? Garbage in, garbage out. In fact, as I look back at our own customers, and we have 23,000 customers, it starts with the basics. First of all, in my opinion, despite you and I being in the world of tech, we think everyone's moved to the cloud. The reality is absolutely the opposite. It's only a small percentage. In fact, there was some data I saw that in North America, if you look at all the businesses, only 21% have adopted the cloud. There's still a lot of on-prem infrastructure software that these mm-hmm. companies are running with. In my opinion, the first step of this journey is, and not all of them, but most of them, migrating from on-prem to the cloud. The second thing is making sure that your data privacy, your data security, your data governance is in place before you can unleash the power of generative AI. So I'll give you one example that has happened to me in real, when I'm in customer calls or prospect calls, rather. Like somebody asked me, they said, hey, if we deploy your knowledge base or co-pilot, as we call it, for our HR information mm-hmm. system, can somebody run a query and say, tell me my CEO's salary? I said, yes, it can. They said, oh, no. I said, it can if, for instance, some file, 9 sub-level folders below, has the wrong permission that this person could actually access. Of course, they didn't know about it. But because of generative AI, it can pull up that piece of information and serve it to you. So the first order of business is you need to get your permission model, your data privacy in place before you can turn on AI. The second thing they asked me was, okay, let's assume this is all right. And here's the VP of HR who runs the same question and says, what's our CEO's salary? Can they get it? I said, if they have access to the file, they will. But let's say somebody in recruiting, in HR, runs the same query, the system should not give them that information, because more than likely, the permission model of your cloud data is so robust that they cannot access that information. So making a distinction between what your role is, what your access controls are, what the data privacy is, to me is as important as the ability to serve the information using NLP-like construct. And those things, people are still sort of getting comfortable with, Arman. I don't think we're there yet completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. Absolutely. So now going back to basics, to just content. Now, all of these customers you are working with, and they are trying to create really a good content system with data privacy in mind, with security in mind. What has been their biggest challenge that it has not been done yet after so many years that content management system has been in place? It's not a new category of software, but you see still companies are evolving and they are trying to really improve what they are doing. What do you see as a challenge that they should really pay attention to in order to create the best system they want from content management system?
So, you know, there are multiple answers for this. It's not one simple answer that can help address the question. The first and foremost thing is that you have to look at the end user behavior or change management. So as an example, in most organizations, if they were running off a typical Windows file server with either direct or network attached storage, they would access their S drive, P drive, Y drive, whatever the alphabet was. And based on the permission model, the NTFS permission model, they could access the data depending on can they read only, can they edit, are they the data owner and this and that. When you move them to the cloud, you have to make sure that the end user is working off the same P drive or X drive or Y drive, except the big difference is that instead of it being served by an on-prem infrastructure or a file server, it's been delivered through the cloud without the user even knowing about it. The user doesn't need to know that I'm working off the cloud. Mm-hmm. So that's a change management part. But then asking, you know, going deep into your question, when people do this major, I would say, uplift to go from on-prem to the cloud, the fundamental questions come up. All the data that you have, should it be moved to the cloud? Because just like a regular household, I can bet you, whether it's you or me or anyone else, we buy stuff and then we end up accumulating it in our garage, in our closets. The same thing happens with data. So migrating to the cloud affords you the opportunity to say, should you go through any kind of data cleansing discipline to say not everything needs to be moved to the cloud? Even assuming the worst case, you say, I like to keep everything, I got to move. Then you have to look at the permission model to say, is it adequate enough or does it have, I would say, it's like a sieve, it's got pores where people could access information that they should not be. And therefore moving to the cloud gives you that opportunity to close those holes and make your data security, data governance more controllable. Then you unleash the power of AI. So depending on the maturity of the organization, depending on how strong their IT is, the answer varies. But the foremost thing, in my opinion, is change management, user behavior. You don't want to force them to say, adopt a different way of working. Most knowledge workers, they don't care about your content management system. They don't care about the cloud on-prem. They just want to get their job done. They want data closest to the edge, whichever device they're on. Security, two-factor authentication, controls and external sharing, that's IT and CISO's responsibility. So the solution provider that you're working with should make that easy for you to manage and administer. But the end user, pardon my choice of words, doesn't give rat's ass about it.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, making the content management system in a way that is natural to the behavior of end users and getting closer to where they are and their content is, rather than asking them to take extra steps in order to make this work, that's the key to success. And yes, if you make it easier and more organic, more natural to end users, then you can really see the project is successful and the user adoption is high, versus if you are expecting end users to change their behavior in order to make the content management system work, well, most likely that would be a big challenge to face.
You nailed it, Arman. I couldn't have said it better. To synthesize, any such capability should adapt to the existing usage and user behavior rather than the other way around. But of course, you don't want to be tied into an old style of working, but gradually it can introduce new capabilities that naturally pulls people into a different way of working. But you cannot come in and say the system works this way, now you have to all adapt. That'll be challenging, and sometimes the failure rate will be way higher than the other way around, as you said.
Okay, makes sense. Now, when we are talking about really SaaS, you mentioned cloud, you mentioned that not every business is in the cloud. Actually, the minority of businesses in the US, based on what you said, actually have moved to the cloud, and the majority is still running on-prem. Do you see that this is going to change in near future, or it has reached to kind of a stable level that probably, you know, if you, I can think of, for example, when mobile came and this smartphone devices came to market, many people strongly believed that nobody will use laptop 10, 15 years from now. And laptop will be just out, and every single person, everything they wanted to do will do with their smartphone, maybe a tablet at some point, but done. It didn't happen. So laptops still are selling. Still people go and buy laptop and use laptop. Some of them use tablet and they use a smartphone as well. And is it the case with cloud? Are we going to see cloud exists, but it's just for some cases, and on-prem will exist forever for some other cases, and they will settle down at a kind of their own proportion rather than everything has to move to cloud at 99.9% and there is no on-prem. How do you see it?
You know, this is one of my favorite topics. I'm surprised that you're bringing it up, because before I answer your question, I'll tell you my Twitter handle. Mm-hmm. It's an oxymoron. My Twitter handle is cloud not enough.
Oh.
And that's an oxymoron for a cloud company CEO. And therein lies the answer to your question, or I would agree with your comment, that look, there is a rapid acceleration of migrating from on-prem to the cloud. So it's not static. That is accelerating. But there still remains use cases. There still remains industries where the role of on-prem, or let's call it accessing data on-prem, either through a virtual cache or closest to the edge, is still absolutely critical for a variety of reasons. One could be legal, which is less and less these days. The other big one is when you have people working on extremely large files, let's say a CAD/CAM drawing, which if you were to print is 60,000 pages, and you have five people working on it, trying to work it off the cloud where everyone's in the cloud is not that simple. It's not that easy as it used to be when you're working in the office and working at LAN speeds, and you're having the benefit of global file locking, concurrency control, version management, this and that. So my point of view always has been that just like the mythical paperless office, if you recall the term, and I was looking up in Wikipedia, Business Week, that magazine claimed they invented the word mythical paperless office or paperless office in 1975. We still have paper in less form. So as I'm talking to you, I still have a book here. I still get the newspaper in paper. So paper is there, but less and less. I think the same thing will happen with unstructured content or data, where more and more will move to the cloud. But depending on the industry, depending on the use case, the file types, applications, the role of on-prem is never going to be zero. So the world will be hybrid in different shapes. But absolutely, there is a migration and acceleration of people trying to move to the cloud.
So we are not settled yet at the final percentage or getting close to that. It can move from 20% you mentioned to maybe 30, 40. But at one point, it will be more. Like, you know, that's really it. Now there are use cases that would be best. I have seen from honestly control perspective and cost control perspective, some trends that they have moved to cloud and now they are back on-prem. And they thought that this is more economically beneficial to them. And sometimes they have more control. And honestly, technologies have improved a lot, right? So for example, Kubernetes now is a new operating system by itself. You don't have to run it in the cloud. You can run it locally for yourself, and you get a lot of benefits that as a cloud provider can, you know, offer you those benefits. You can really secure it. Or there are some other standards that now are well articulated that you can adopt and essentially secure those So I have seen those kind of trends in the market. I'm not saying everybody is going back from cloud to on-prem, but I'm telling that now there are kind of on both sides, there are people moving to cloud, but also there are some people that have realized not always cloud works for every single use case in every situation. And I need to really just look at it objectively, subjectively, and make a decision for myself or my use case.
Very well said. In fact, amongst you, the very few people I've spoken with, which is talking pragmatically about the cloud is not the be all and end all. Yes, indeed. It comes down to core versus critical. The distinction I have between core versus critical for anything you do, any businesses, critical is something you absolutely need, but do you need to own the hardware or the software or the IP? Can you outsource it to someone? Whereas core is something that you absolutely need to own. So the question is, by going to the cloud, does it give you all the capabilities you had before and a lot more? There's no maintenance, there's no hardware upgrades, or security, data governance, generally with a good solid provider is better than what you can do yourself. But if you are, let's say, a JP Morgan, which is a real example, given their size and given what the business they're in, they run everything themselves. They run everything on-prem, everything on-prem. Now, when I say on-prem, they might use AWS, they might use GCP, they might use Azure, but it's totally under their control. Whereas a mid-market bank like First Republic was a customer of ours, which is now JP Morgan, unfortunately, they were running off Ignite because they had all the challenges and problems of a JP Morgan, but they didn't have the IT budget or the IT wherewithal, and the total cost of ownership was very important to them. So they outsourced this thing to us, and we serve the same needs that now with they're back in JP Morgan, JP Morgan saying, no, you can't go to the cloud, work off our systems.
Yeah, no, that's a great example. Absolutely. I'm going to also ask you based on, the experience that you have, and you have grown the company to this point, essentially very pragmatically, and you have had experience not just in the US but outside the US before you come to the US. In UK, for example, you had another company, and then you started in the US. Based on everything you have seen, and you are in Silicon Valley now, working with these new technologies. If you wanted to really see, this is really the new trend that you see just outside even, content business that you see, but there are some fundamental changes coming to software world for the next 10 years. And you have had experience some decades in this software business, maybe during last two decades, you have seen changes happening as well. And now you are looking ahead and looking at the next decade and say, software business also is going to continue these changes. What are those trends that you would think about it, that it's going to be different when we are going to look at software business in particular, SaaS or not SaaS, in general software business, and would say, next 10 years in some cases has to be different in these aspects?
That's a hard one, Arman, because it's very hard to predict what's out there for 10 years. While you're right, I've been here actually in the Valley for 31 years, or in the US, I landed in the Valley. And I've seen all kinds of things just like you have. If you recall, it was initially it was Web 2.0, then it was Web 3.0, blockchain, IoT, all kinds of things. And of course, now we have generative AI. I'll be honest to say, I don't have the smarts to say what's going to happen in 10 years from now. I don't know that. The thing I'm able to now say more convincingly with years of experience is, okay, is this going to be a trendy thing that'll be there for a couple of years before it becomes meaningless or dies down, versus this has a long tail effect? So it'll be foolish to say crypto and blockchain are gone. They're not. But they're not as pervasive and as part of everyday conversation as it used to be with Bitcoin and Ethereum and Dogecoin and this and that. And the value of blockchain is without a doubt unparalleled. But I think with AI, or generative AI, I think the lifespan of this in terms of it being part of the regular vernacular before it becomes par for the course is going to be a lot longer. Because the power of what it can do, even we, are discovering to say, holy shit, it can do this. Oh, it can do that. I think that's going to be probably another 4 to 5 years. And I don't want to stick my neck out to say, will we get AGI? That's for people smarter than me, like Elon Musk of the world, to say that. But I do think the core human need, or the knowledge worker, this is who we sell to, their needs will evolve where, as you've seen, people were completely working 5 days in the office, then COVID came, became all remote. Now people are being asked to come back 2, 3, 4, depending on who you're, Amazon, 5 days. That equilibrium is coming into some sense of reality where the human need for in-person collaboration, the human need for pressing the flesh, if you're a prospect or a customer, that never goes away. And people are realizing that making that connection, software is software. Yeah, it'll evolve. It'll get smarter and smarter, maybe cheaper. But the human element, the human curation, the human involvement is going to get to a higher and higher value plane. Certain basic mundane tasks will get automated for sure. You don't need the humans for that. But to say that humans will be completely replaced beyond an autonomous or mundane task, I don't see that happening. The same people who are threatened by the growth of AI, they'll become much more, I would say, they have to go on the higher value stack. And if you recall, outsourcing used to be the big buzzword that, oh, geez, jobs are being taken to India and Philippines and wherever they are. It didn't increase the unemployment here. Those same people had to go up the value stack to provide a higher value. I see that trend happening over the years, irrespective of the technology. That part I can predict. Now, what technology will it be from now, 6, 4 years from now?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So the core needs will stay the same, as I understand from your perspective. Software industry is not going away from your perspective. 10 years from now, still we have software industry. Still robots are not coding. Probably human is still sitting down and write the code. You know, still we need to communicate. We need to collaborate. Still we need to manage the documents. But there are some aspects of it that might get differently, or the same thing that, you know, we were communicating before email, and then email came, and then mobile came, and now AI is there. All of these are facilitating it, but it doesn't go away. It's still the need to really write messages to people is there. It's still as human as we are. We need to really get involved. And in our probably next 10 years, we are not predicting that if I call you back in 10 years and say, hey, what are we doing at this point? You say nothing. Robots are just doing the work and you and I are just walking on the street and not doing anything. So that's not the prediction, at least. So
you just nailed it. Absolutely. You know, yeah. One thing you forget is all of us, we thrive and build relationship based on one core construct, human empathy. Even a customer doesn't buy from any vendor. There has to be empathy. And until and unless the robots are invented where they can provide that empathy, I don't see anything changing in that regard. And I don't see that happening. I mean, you can have these movies where, you know, the guy falls in love with a robotic woman. That's a pretty sad guy. But humans are humans. You can't replace them.
Now, at the end, I would like to ask you, if you could, you know, tell us about a book or two or something that you liked, either personally or professionally, that you thought, this is a great book, I enjoyed it, and I would like to recommend to the rest of the crowd to read it if they want.
One book I've been championing for a long time because it had a very profound impact on me was a long time back. If you recall, 49ers, our local team here.
Yes.
Bill Walsh, when he became the manager and he did a turnaround, he ended up writing a book, which is, I may not get it right, but it was called The Score Will Take Care of Itself. It's a must read, in my opinion. I've sent it to customers, even certain employees, because the main takeaway in that book was when he took over 49ers, they were kind of a laughing stock of NFL. And when he walks in their Santa Clara headquarters, he doesn't look at the QB, the quarterback or fullback or the team composition. Of course, he had to look at that eventually. The first thing he looked at was, as he walks in, how does the receptionist, when the call comes in, picks up the phone, and how does she or he comes across? Because that quality aspect of the organization started from the first interaction, which was somebody calling the main switch. And that's a book that I would heartily recommend to everyone to say, you know, it goes back to the old saying, Arman, you know, don't just think of the destination, enjoy the journey. That's what that book is all about. And the second one, which is very recent. So one of my investors and my board members, and I love the guy, Mike Maples. And by the way, he's not paying me to do this. I'm on my board, but I don't owe him anything. He actually just recently wrote a book. So I don't shill any management books because they're all, most of them are now the same. It's like old wine in new bottles. I've read plenty of them, and I'm so have you and your audience. But Mike just recently wrote a book called Pattern Breakers. It's Mike and there's another guy, Peter, I forget his last name. I read this book, and because Mike, of course, gave it to me and I was reading it, I'm like, wow, this is a good book. So I would say if somebody is thinking of starting a company per se, Pattern Breakers is a good one. But Bill Walsh's The Score Will Take Care of Itself, generic can be applied to any facet of our professional personal life.
Great. Thank you very much. And it has been a great discussion and I enjoyed it, Vinit. Thank you very much again for taking the time to speak with us. And definitely I will call you in 10 years and see what where we are. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Arman. Thanks for the opportunity. I enjoyed it too. All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.